The first ever criminal trial of a former president begins this week. I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, and this week, legal expert Ricky Kleeman joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about jury selection, the latest trial developments, and legal strategy.
From the defense point of view, for Donald Trump to be signing checks for Michael Cohen, it would have been something usual because Michael Cohen was working for the Trumps.
The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What is up, my friends? Welcome to the MMA Fighting Rankings Show. Hope you're having a wonderful little start to your month. We appreciate you so much for joining us. I am Sean Alshadi. I'm here with my guy, the Prince of Positivity, the King in the North, Alexander K. Lee. We are back.
What up?
Once again, AK, it's been a very busy past few weeks. How are we doing today?
Sheen, it feels like we just did this, didn't we? Didn't we just do a ranking show? Doesn't it feel like we just did a ranking show not too recently? I mean, I'm excited to do it again.
I missed you. We needed to do it soon, man.
I always miss you and our esteemed guest today. But yeah, it feels like we just did this. I don't know if you want to explain to people. We had kind of a short cycle this time, eventful, but a bit of a short cycle this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. It's because of the way the schedule sort of worked out. Last month ended up being our busiest month ever, whereas this ranking cycle, we're really only looking at the past 3 weeks or so. Still a lot going on, though, and just a couple of highlights to run through it. I mean, Amanda Nunes reclaims her top spot at bantamweight, obviously, even steals back a few first place votes on the women's pound for pound list. Brandon Moreno reaffirms his place at 125. We had new names, new blood coming in like Sergey Pavlovich, Ricky Simone, and Muhammad Mahayev make their debuts. And even a few vets who were little mainstays of these lists took a tumble. We're talking Derek Lewis, Misha Tate, Michelle Watterson. And there was certainly more. But first, AK, we got to bring in our panel this month. You alluded to it. It's a new panel. First, your best friend and mine, host of Heck of a Morning, Between the Links, and like a billion other shows on the MMA Fighting Podcast Network. This man is prolific. You already know he is Mr. Mike Heck. And also along with us is my fellow deputy editor of MMA Fighting, my tag team partner behind the scenes, Stephen Morocco. We appreciate you fellas so much for joining us. So let's start with the big question, Mike.
Stephen, finally.
I know we're getting Stephen making an appearance.
Finally.
Bring on the abuse. Bring on the verbal abuse.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We got to break you in.
That's what these shows are about, right? Rankings?
This one, yeah, especially.
Well, let's start with Mike first. I mean, Mike, when it came time to do your rankings this month, where was the story for you? What was the story of July? Like, what was the standout sort of situation of you for this ranking cycle?
I mean, I should probably stay consistent from the last show because I was on the last show as well, because you would ask me what I thought would be the biggest story over the next few weeks. And I said Yair Rodriguez was probably going to be the biggest story, and maybe not for the reasons we had hoped for, but I think it might have been him because we've had quite a debate on where the featherweight division should go. And I think Yair took a bit of a step up. I think I have him like two spots ahead of Josh Emmett. And those two guys seem to be in the conversation for an interim title, or at least for Yair. Like, I'm not even thinking about interim title. I deserve a fight for the actual gold. So I think I'll just stay consistent and stick with that because it was just such a weird ending to the fight. And it's an ending that kind of grew on all of us. At first, we're like, oh, he doesn't deserve a title fight. At best, he deserves an interim title fight. And as time has sort of gone on, we kind of score it more of an actual win for Yair as opposed to a freak accident because
of
how it ended.
Isn't that funny how that works?
It's crazy how that works. And I feel like it's sort of what we dealt with on Saturday in the heavyweight fight as well. We reacted and sort of hastily. And then the more time has gone on, the more we've watched replays, we're like, you know what? Maybe it's not as bad as we thought it was. So I'm going to stick with that, but you can make other arguments as well, which I'm sure one of you guys will come up with what my silver medalist would be in this conversation.
Yeah. And it's funny now, Yair sort of finds himself in a similar place that a lot of people, actually number one contenders, if you want to put that in quotes, find themselves in the UFC in these various divisions where they maybe deserve a title fight or maybe they don't, but they're sort of that person for a title fight, but they're definitely just not going to get one anytime soon. And it's all sort of log jammed, and we'll hit on that a little bit later in the show. But Stephen, man, I want to throw it to you. Like when you were doing your rankings this month, what was sort of the big story for you that jumped out?
I mean, it's probably recency bias, but it's Amanda Nunes reclaiming her spot at the top. And I think it's mainly because that upset was such a huge one. Juliana Pena upsetting her in the way that she did. Just the fact that Amanda was able to come out and look like the person that she's looked like for so long. Not only that, but to really put Juliana in her place in so many different ways, technically. It was almost like a restoring of the order, and it sort of got her back in that GOAT conversation where I think she deserved to be.
Yeah, I would have to say that I agree with you in regards to it feels like there's an argument that of everybody, Amanda made the biggest statement this month because it sort of felt like this was an all or nothing for her in this Juliana Pena rematch. And you already saw it happening, right? Like you saw the chatter starting to just maybe pick away a little bit at the legacy, poke holes in this woman who I think has long been sort of the consensus GOAT for everyone. It kind of felt like if the Pena rematch had gone differently, had gone south, there would have been a lot of very silly revisionist history going on. A lot of chatter about how Amanda was never really that good to begin with. She was always overrated, blah, blah, blah. It's silly, but you could sort of see the seeds being laid there by some people. AK, I mean, was that sort of where you ended up as well when you did your rankings this month?
I'll throw out another one, but that would probably be my number one choice as well. Listen, I was one of the people who ahead of that fight was like, there's questions that need to be asked about how much Amanda Nunes has left. I'm not saying I agreed with these questions, but that they had to be asked because, you know, she is a mom now. She wants to coach sometime in the future. She's talked about retirement on previous occasions, you know. So I was like, is that the kind of mindset you can go into against, you know, someone who really derailed you know, that your surefire all-time GOAT talk in your first outing. So I'm not saying I agreed with any of these narratives, but you know, I had to throw them out there. If I believed in any of them, I'll tell you, I was proven wrong because yeah, I think she looked phenomenal. She looks like she's got another 2-3 title defenses left in her, however many she wants to do. And it was very important that she won and won the way she did. I don't care that she didn't finish. I know she herself and Dana White were also saying after like, oh, was there a little more? Did she leave a little more in the tank? Could she put a more of a stamp on it? And it's like dominating a tough opponent like Juliana Pena for 5 rounds, knocking her down multiple times was really, really impressive. And if we see a third meeting, I'm actually kind of down for it. But also I understand why if people just saw that one fight, we're like, I'm good. I don't need to see it again. Amanda Nunes is the better fighter. The questions have been answered, but
that man always finds something to criticize. He really does. Dude, 50-43 and we're still talking about criticism. It's ridiculous.
He did call the performance dominant multiple times. I should be clear. Dana White did call. He did say dominant. He said it was dominant at least like 3 or 4 times. So, you know, he just nitpicking. But I'll also just throw out there quickly, Sergey Pavlovich, because debuting at number 7. Maybe he has to give a little tip of the cap to Dan Mergliotta, but I think that fight was going his way anyway. He's kind of been lost in the shuffle a little bit with Chris, you know, within the last year, Tom Aspinall, obviously the big up and comer at heavyweight. Chris Daukaus was in there for a bit for taking a couple of losses. Tai Tuivasa, if you want to throw him into that group. And Pavlovich, he kind of had a lot of inactivity for a while, which knocked him out of it. But other than losing his debut to Overeem, like he's looked fantastic. And I think all of us just kind of wanted to see him prove it. And so he gets this Lewis fight, gets a finish. Questionable or not, and now he's in our top 10 just like that, and he belongs that guy. Maybe he's leapfrogged Aspinall as far as who could get a teleshot first. I don't know, considering Aspinall's injury. So that's pretty exciting to me. Always exciting to see that fresh blood. And I will, and one more thing I kind of want to ask you guys, is this Derek Lewis's lot now to be a guy who just his spot is to be taken? Because we just saw it with Tai Tuivasa, now Sergey Pavlovich has done it. He's fought for UFC titles twice. I'm avoiding using the word gatekeeper, but it does feel like he is just a name now for them to eventually throw an up and comer at, and they can get a number next to their name by beating him.
It's an interesting question. I mean, you're looking at him. He's 37 years old, right? This is who he's been for a long time. He's a get or get got fighter. He's a 50-50 coin flip fighter. And for a long time, he was the one who was getting the other guys. And now he's sort of on the other end of that. It's 3 of his past 4. All of those 3 were Ciryl Gane, Tai Tuivasa, Sergey Pavlovich, sort of the new blood. But then you look in there, Chris Daukaus is in there. Also, Curtis Blaydes was not very long ago. And we're all talking about Curtis Blaydes now as one of the best heavyweights in the world still. I don't know, man. It's an interesting question. I feel like Derek still has some left in the tank, and maybe this is just a rough patch, but maybe I'm just sort of, I just love that man so much. I refuse to see what's in front of me. What do you think, Mike?
It's tough, man. Like, Derek is who he is, and he fights the way he fights. And every Derek Lewis fight is going to be like, it's like you say, he's get or get God. And he's in this, like, the Curtis Blaydes fight is so strange to me because no one thought he would win that fight.
And that wasn't long ago. That was like a year ago.
That was in February of 2021. He was a plus 300 dog at best, depending on where you look. And Curtis Blaydes decided, you know what? You know what I think would be a great strategy? I'm going to go box Derek Lewis. I think that's a great idea. When I can just take him down and burn him out.
He was doing okay.
He was doing okay,
though. And then he got, I mean, that was what, like, if you go back in history, that was one of the most violent knockouts ever. Like, I went back and watched it. It was one of the worst where I was just like, oh my God, like, he needs to go to the hospital. I hope he's okay. Like, I'm really concerned about his future well-being. No one thought he'd win that fight. And then he goes out and wins. It's just nuts who this, like, I don't know. Like, you could throw him in there with anybody and, like, it's all going to be the same. Like, I was talking about this on Heck of a Morning on Tuesday. If they booked Derek Lewis against Paco Porta right now, would anybody complain? No one would complain about that. But if they booked him with Ngannou or anybody like that, like, maybe not Ngannou, but they
like a Romanov, like, a top five heavy, or something. Yeah. Like,
I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I don't want to see
they
it.
Booked, yeah. If they booked a rematch with Pavlovich, it's fine. If they booked him against like anybody in the top five, it's okay. But if they booked him with Paco Porta or Chase Sherman, like, no one's going to care. Like, it's just gonna be like, oh, cool, Derek Lewis is fighting. Like, the reaction will still be the same. So he's not quite a gatekeeper. He is kind of a litmus test, but he's just in a category by himself where if he fights anybody, it's interesting. And you can make an argument in a compelling case heading into it that he could win this fight or that he can lose this fight to everybody, including Paco Porta and Chase Sherman. Like, that's just who Derek Lewis is. And he, as long as he gets a paycheck and it goes in his bank account, he doesn't care who he fights. And that's what I think people love about him, which is really, really interesting. And I just want to add to this. If Derek Lewis wasn't the guy whose face is on the mat, do you think we'd be having this conversation right now?
No.
Like, do you honestly think we'd be making this big of a deal out of it if it was anybody else besides Derek Lewis?
No.
I think it's wild.
He's beloved.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the little drips of Boston Mike that come in there during the Paco Porta.
I was just about to say, can I have you do a hype track for Paco Porta?
Please don't.
Just having you say his name to a beat.
I'll never not say it like that for the rest of my life. I'll force it out of me.
Yeah.
Derek Lewis.
Never stop being you.
Derek Lewis fall into the number, I believe, number eight,
which is the lowest he has been really in the history of these rankings for us
since we started doing them. As high as number six in our one of our panelist battles, and as low as number 11.
Oh, someone's a hater
now.
Someone out there is a hater putting out 11. I was asked about Derek earlier this week, and I almost am of the mind where, like, I really hope the UFC doesn't do the UFC thing here where they just keep feeding the old guy to the young guns, because, like, they did something the opposite with Anthony Smith, right? Where, I guess maybe not the opposite, but they sort of let Anthony Smith rebuild himself to a certain degree. They weren't throwing him against these crazy prospects. They were more throwing him against these 15 to 20 to 25 range guys. And all of a sudden, Anthony Smith gets three wins in a row. He looks like a world beater again. And we were talking about him like he was somebody who mattered again. I really hope they do something like that with Derek and they don't just keep throwing him to, like, the Sergey Pavlovich's, the Romanovs, whoever. Cause, like, Sergey Pavlovich might just be really damn good. Like, dude is, I think he's only lost to Alistair Overeem in his entire life, and everything else is pretty much first round knockouts for him. Like, there's a real chance we're looking at this fight a couple years back or a couple years from now as like, oh yeah, of course Sergey Pavlovich won this one. I mean, Steven, where do you want to see this go?
I mean, if there's any benefit or silver lining here for Derek Lewis, is the fact that he fights in the UFC heavyweight division and he's marketable AF, you know, he could lose. He will lose again, like you said, you know, with his style. And he's one of those guys that they put together a couple of wins and he's kind of back in the picture. He's, you know, he's past that point right now where it losses and wins matter that much. He's just a marketable commodity that they can use until, you know, he starts to trend you know, one direction more than the other, more often than not. I want to see Derek. I want to see Derek fight Parker Porter right now. That's what I want.
Let's go.
If only to hear Mike say that name 20 more times.
I'm here for that. Sign me up. Yeah, all the way up.
Do not give him Jailton Almeida. Do not do that.
Yeah.
Because like every time somebody beats Shamil Abdurakhimov, they fight Derek Lewis. So don't do it. Do not do that. Please. I'm begging you.
That's the path of Derek Lewis.
Don't do it.
That's just the path. That's how the UFC goes. It's funny because there was one other big fallout from UFC 277, which was sort of the big show of this cycle. And we haven't mentioned it at all. And that was obviously Brandon Moreno. And sort of the way the flyweight division has played out. And we talked about it on the post-fight show a little bit. I will say this one, the way this sort of shook out with the rankings, kind of surprised me a bit. And maybe it shouldn't have. The Davidson-Figueiredo hate train is seemingly stronger now than it's ever been. Of all the guys to get all this guff in the MMA community, I don't understand why it's this guy. He is always entertaining every time out. He is, you know, been a very reliable champion for the most part. But there was some surprising debate coming out of 277 among the team that I just didn't expect among the flyweight ranks. And again, maybe I'm naive. I probably am. But Brandon Moreno coming off this sensational highlight reel win over Kai Kara France, securing this interim title shot, giving us the tetralogy, and stealing away two first place votes here at 125. And Mike, I hope you don't mind me revealing this. Those two were you and Casey as well, our good friend E. Casey Layden. You guys were the two, AK Steven, the three of us and Jed voted for Figueiredo. And then, of course, you have Damon and Guillerme out there doing their own thing, voting for the DJ Slayer, Adriano Moraes. So flyweight right now is all over the place. Three different people getting first place votes on our rankings. Mike, why was Moreno your new number one this month? Make the case and talk us through this.
As a conductor of the hate train, the Davis and Figueiredo.
You and Joe Rogan, man. You and Joe Rogan just leading this.
Yeah, that's what I said in the People's Pre-Fight show, that this fight was for the actual title, so now Moreno is the actual champion. That was just dumb, by the way, and it set a horrible precedent for the rest of the card. But I think Brandon Moreno is undefeated against Davis and Figueiredo, at least how I feel about it, at least how I scored the third fight. Because the first fight, I mean, you can make a case that Figgy won for sure, but he cheated, he got caught, and he got a point taken away. So, and that changed everything. So that is a draw. Moreno went out there and starched him in the second fight. And the third fight, while Figueiredo made some great adjustments, I thought him going to Team Cejudo and going to fight ready and doing all those things was huge. And it led to the fight being what it was. I scored the fight for Brandon Moreno. And then I went back and I was like, maybe I was looking at it from like a biased view. And then I watched it again yesterday just to make sure I'm not dumb, like that I have this right. And I went and watched it again. And I still scored it for Brandon Moreno. So to me, he's 2-0-1 against Figueiredo, and he just went out there and had the kind of performance that he needed to earn that spot. Now, if he went out and eked out a split decision against Kai Kara France, maybe I'm not looking at it like that. Like, maybe I think Figueiredo might get the spot, but the fact that Moreno went out there, won the first two rounds, he was in a little bit of trouble in the third. Kai Kara France was lighting him up, and then he saw that opening for that body kick, went in, finished the fight, got the win. And Kara France is on such a run. Like, entering the fight, I actually felt like Kara France had that aura about him that, like, no matter what happens, like, no matter how outgunned or outmatched he might be on paper, like, he just had that aura that there's just no way this guy was going to lose to anybody. And Moreno went out there, finished the job. So to me, like, he's undefeated against Figueiredo, and he just finished a guy who I didn't think could really lose. I just thought, like, the world of MMA, the gods are just going to shine this light upon Kai Kara France until he had undisputed gold wrapped around his waist. And Brandon Moreno said, I don't care what you guys think. I don't care what the MMA gods think. I'm going to go win this belt. I'm going to finish this guy. I'm going to get all deep in a box of Nutella at the post-fight press conference. So Brandon Moreno, to me, it's, I mean, you can call it 1A, 1B, but if you're going to call it that, Brandon Moreno's 1A, Figgy's 1B, and that's why we need to see this tetralogy, not the quadrilogy, the tetralogy between these two gentlemen, maybe by the end of the year, or early 2023.
Very important distinction there. Tetralogy, not quadrilogy, people. Your Brandon Moreno is just so delightful. The Nutella is just such like a perfect Brandon Moreno little spice there. I mean, I got to say, Mike, I don't agree, but I respect where you're coming from, because you say it with conviction. I think there's probably like half of the community, MMA community, that agrees with you too. This feels to me like very much a Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovsky situation before we had that third fight. But I mean, AK, Steven, where do you guys sort of land on this? I mean, do you see where Mike's coming from, or do you think this is all very silly and it's obviously figgy?
Man, it's there's nothing obvious about it. There's nothing obvious about the top of flyweight. Like you said, we also have two of our panelists voting for one champion, Adriano Moraes. And why not? He definitively beat Demetrius Johnson.
Even though basically like a 135er, but we don't need to.
And they will fight again. He could strengthen his case this month. They actually fight in 2 weeks, I think, August 12th, I want to say. Or am I thinking about Bellator? There's a one championship card this week and this month. It's one on Prime Video One. What a snappy name. One on Prime Video One.
heavily anticipated too, the fact that all of us obviously knew the date off the top
absolutely.
Of our head.
Absolutely. And that will feature, fingers crossed, that will feature the rematch and headlining between Demetrius Johnson and Adrian Moraes. So there's that. And then also there's this whole thing with Figgy and Moreno. We keep kind of joking about it, like, oh, this is a fight that we can see happen like 10 times. Like, it's just so fun. They're so evenly matched. It's so exciting. They're so clear. I think so clearly the two best guys, at least in the UFC, in the flyweight division. So while there's a lot of fresh challengers, I understand why people don't even want to see a fourth fight, because it's like, why not? What about Pantoja? What about, Manel Kopp if he gets a big win? Oscar Askarov's out there. I know like he's coming off a loss, but he has the resume. There's so many good flyweights that should get a title shot within the next, 18 months. But they might not, depending on what happens with Figgy and Moreno. So my long way of saying, like, I have Figgy number one, just because he beat them in their most recent outing. But there's like, when we look back on this, like as an all time thing, man, it's like, I don't know if you'll ever be able to say one guy is so definitively better than the other. Moreno finished him in the second fight. Davison won not a competitive decision in the third fight. And then, as we all said, the first fight, pretty much a Figueiredo win, which he botched with the fouls. So I'm comfortable having Figgy number one. If he stays up there, for a long time, if he beats Moreno again and then stays up there for a long time, that wouldn't surprise me. But it just feels like these two are going to be in talks forever. And I know people aren't going to want to see it, but who knows? If Figgy never goes up to 135, he probably will at some point. If he doesn't, I mean, these guys could meet a fifth time, like somewhere down the road. I honestly don't know. They're so closely meshed.
Yeah. And I think actually that's probably the best route for solving this logjam, and probably the most likely route, because Figgy is going to go up to 135. I think that's just a too hard of a weight cut for him. And I think that he's eventually going to go up. So that's probably going to be the thing that moves things along most expediently. But it's interesting. I mean, I get your argument, Mike. They are technically 1-1-1. But there's this just reek of subjectivity there in terms of what the score should be as opposed to what the score is. And for me, he won the last fight. It doesn't matter. This is just my philosophy, and we've had this debate since we started this damn thing.
Reek of subjectivity could be the subtitle of this show at this point.
Welcome to the show, Steven. Welcome to the show.
I mean, it's just like I'm the new kid, but it's like I feel like that we're going back to that original argument. What we would like to be versus what is. And I think the strongest argument is the fact that it is 1-1-1. Technically, they are pretty much even in record. But the most recent meeting, he won for the undisputed title. Therefore, he is number one.
With the mic dropped.
Yeah.
Mic like that.
I was waiting for it. Yeah. No, I get it. And to me, like, even heading into this card, like, it was kind of like the Shevchenko-Nunes pound-for-pound thing, where you have both that are like neck and neck, and it's almost like you go to that to a carnival and you roll the ball and you try to get it in the hole and the little horse moves spots, and it's just a matter of inches of who gets there first. And I feel like these two guys are almost neck and neck. Maybe Moreno is slightly behind, but then he rolled a freaking three, and now he's a do-do-do-do-do-do, and now he's just a little bit more ahead of Figueiredo. And it was kind of the same thing like with Usman and Volkanovski right now. Like, Usman probably like has the better record, and like Usman probably has more of a compelling case. But like what Volkanovski has done recently during this time that Usman hasn't competed, he's just jumping forward. And now he's like, now he's ahead. Now, if Usman goes out later this month and beats Leon Edwards, like he's probably back to being the number one pound for pound guy. So it's just a game of inch between these two guys. I'm not going to argue with you if you got Figgy in there. I probably will argue with you on the Adriano Moraes thing, but that's neither here nor there.
Same.
But If you have Figgy number one, cool. If you got Moreno number one, cool. It's just, I don't think any of us are wrong. I think we're both right, and that's it.
Maybe Queen Damon. We'll see.
Well, yeah, two of us are wrong, but not us on this show. You know? We're all very wrong. I'm glad you mentioned the pound for pound situation at the women's ranks between Amanda and Valentina, because to me, my philosophy, I guess we all have our own different philosophies for rankings. My philosophy for divisions is I try to be a little bit more rigid with it. Follow, you know, maybe like, hey, not what have you done for me lately type of stuff. Whereas pound for pound has always felt to me like a very fluid thing where it's, you know, if you've been very active recently, you deserve to sort of move up above someone who's been very stagnant, that sort of thing. Again, that's just my philosophy. That doesn't need to be your philosophy, but it is an interesting situation we have now come back to. I say back to because we've had this conversation before, but now we're sort of all of a sudden revisiting it between Amanda and Valentina, because Amanda just 50-43, the number two woman in her division. At this point, it feels like there's no doubt who's the best 135er in the world. She's, whatever you think about 145, she is still the 145 pound champion. She beat Chris Cyborg. And so now she's back at the top spot at 135, but she also got a couple number first place votes on the pound for pound list. I was one of those. Guillerme was one of those as well. The rest of you guys, six of you guys, voted for Valentina and kept her at number one. And to me, I was surprised that this wasn't more of a debate, I guess. I was expecting more of a 4-4, 3-5 type of situation and more people to come on Amanda's side, especially considering the performance we just saw from Valentina, right? Where she very nearly lost and could have lost had she not gotten that headbutt. I found it all very interesting the way it shook out. I'm curious, AK, I'll throw it to you. I mean, do you feel like I'm crazy with throwing Amanda right back up? Or are you as surprised as me that this didn't become more of a thing?
Well, I definitely stuck with Shevchenko. I don't think you're crazy because I think it's very easy. I think after Shevchenko's last performance, there were some people wondering, were we too quick? Well, or that they want to wait to see what happened with this fight, because the big, you know, storyline after Shevchenko's fight with Tyler Santos is, oh, now we've seen cracks in Shevchenko's armor. Now we've finally seen like what it looks like when she's vulnerable. You know, people just, you know, that just happened with Amanda. Amanda lost. Shevchenko, she pulled out the decision win, but a lot of people disagreed with that score. They thought that that Santos did pull off the victory. So she's kind of was teetering a little bit. And then suddenly Amanda goes out there, avenges this loss in definitive fashion, incredible five round performance. And again, and then we're going body of work. I think they both have extremely strong bodies of work, but you know, Amanda Nunes, two divisions, names like Chris Cyborg, Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate, Holly Holm, you know, all that stuff.
Up 2-0 in that series.
And she has beaten Shevchenko head to head at 135 pounds. So it's certainly very easy to put her back up there. For me, I think the difference was, I'm trying to think how Nunes could get back up now. I think I gave Shevchenko a lot more credit for that Santos fight than most did. That's probably the only difference. Like, I think she, like, that fight was not a showcase for her, but I also think she did better than people think. And also, you know, there was the thing of like Santos did so much better than expected and all that. So we kind of discussed this on a bunch of other shows ad nauseum, so I won't go over that again. So, but for the fact that Shevchenko was able to pull out that win is kind of enough for me to keep her in that number one spot. But I mean, Nunes certainly looked great. I don't know what she has to do to reclaim the spot. Maybe if she has another dominant tail defense or a fast finish, but I'm really holding on to that Shevchenko at number one for now. And hopefully Shevchenko gets back in the cage, before the end of the year and can cement that spot and make it easier for me to keep her there.
I mean, Mike, was this even something you considered, or were you pretty locked in on Shevchenko at one?
I thought about it, but ultimately, to me, Shevchenko is still the number one. She hasn't lost in a long time, and Nunes has. Like, you call it, I hate using the word fluke in fights. I don't think it was a fluke. I think, again, maybe Juliana just caught Amanda on a bad night, but Tyler Santos also caught Valentina Shevchenko on a bad night, and Valentina won, and Amanda didn't. So, to me, that was just kind of weighed the scales. I don't think putting Nunes up there is egregious at all. What I will say, and I'm not going to call this person out because I just saw this.
Oh, I know what you're going to say before you even say it.
I will. Okay, I will.
And actually, AK and I talked about this, but please go ahead.
And I will. Please call them out. Please call them out.
And one of our panelists one of the panelists, not only did they not.
A rogue panelist, one might say.
A rogue panelist had Amanda Nunes heading into this fight, number three pound for pound. After this victory, 50-43, Amanda Nunes has dropped a spot. She's number four on this rogue panelist list. It's so dumb.
Mike, you're my best friend. Mike, your blood pressure, please. Your blood pressure.
I want to
say something just to calm you down. I don't agree with this rogue panelist. But I
can you explain sort of what Mike is talking about too? Because the viewers have no idea.
Oh, okay. So yes, Nunes has dropped to four because our rogue panelists bumped up Ryzen Atomweight champion Seika Izawa up to number three, pound for pound. Now I get it. The majority of our listeners probably not familiar with Izawa. She's 7-0 as a pro. She's looked amazingly dominant in her career so far. She's only 24 years old, and she has two big wins over Ayaka Hamasaki, who is one of the greatest atomweights of all time. Two very convincing wins over Ayaka Hamasaki back to back. So that's kind of her claim to fame right now. And now she's starting to put together her own resume. Again, only seven pro MMA bouts so far, but she has looked sensational. So Shaheen presented this to me in our Slack chat. And at first I was...
Also, it was Casey. I don't know why we're dancing around. It was Casey.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
He's not here to defend himself. He's not. But I will advocate for him. So I will say this. If we are... Unfortunately, we don't keep Adam Weight rankings. We will someday, hopefully, fingers crossed, but I can't promise that. If we are treating Adam Weight as a real division, which it is, much more so than women's featherweight, that's for damn sure, then should we not show respect to the clear-cut best Adam Weight in the world? Her competition, again, outside of Ayaka Hamasaki, does leave a little bit to be desired. Like I said, I would like to see her build her resume first before I would do something like throwing her into the top five, like pound for pound. So I wouldn't do that. But this would be like, imagine if there was a 6-0 fighter who came along at like women's bantamweight and beat Holly Holm. You would just bump them up. I don't know how you put them pound for pound, but you would bump them up. You wouldn't hesitate to bump them up. So this is like the JMMA equivalent of that. It's like she is a clear blue chip talent. Again, she has dominated everyone she's fought. And she has, again, beaten one of the all-time great sort of Adam weights. So, again, if we're going to rate, like, Cyborg highly based on her, you know, and I'm not comparing Izawa to Cyborg. Well, I guess I am. If we're going to rate Cyborg highly based on her dominating featherweight for, you know, whatever, 15 years, then we have to give Izawa some credit for dominating a division that I think is an actual division, if that makes sense. So I don't know why I'm being the devil's advocate. I'm putting myself in the line of fire for Casey here. I'm probably going to catch a lot of stray shots, but I want there to be peace in the land. And I want us to see the reasoning, the logic. It's too high. It's too high.
It's way too high.
She should not be above Nunes.
She should not be above
Nunes. Amanda Nunes dropped a spot after one of the best performances of her career. That's crazy.
It's too high. It's too high, and Izawa hasn't fought since... Oh no, Izawa won
this past month.
She won in July. I'm sorry, she won in July.
Over someone that no one else on this panel would know who it is.
Yeah. Laura, I mean, maybe this is probably new, but I think we have an activist panelist in this rankings committee.
Yes, and that's okay.
And he's using his rankings.
he's misusing his power.
He's weaponizing
a political argument, essentially.
Yeah. Yep.
Because
he's weaponizing his rankings.
Weighted. We are doing this. I think we're all trying to do this to the best of our ability, mm-hmm. given that it's a pound for pound discussion. And there's so many things that go into this. There's so much more subjectivity than other things. I think one guy is just being a little bit more honest about it, you know?
Okay.
Listen. He's like, I'm going to rank this guy higher, so she gets the props that she probably deserves and wouldn't get if we were just doing this from the current landscape.
Listen, we are all friends here. I will just say, I don't want to dwell on it too much. I will just say, I think it's obvious it's too high, but Casey, I understand where you're coming from. I understand why you did this. So I'm not, you know, I don't agree, but I understand the logic.
To bring this back to Nunes, to bring this back to Nunes, because I feel like Mike could go for 30 minutes on this Izawa thing. I just don't understand, I guess, if some, like you had said, you know, Amanda just lost, Valentina hasn't lost for a long time. Valentina did lose. The last time she lost was to Amanda Nunes. She's lost twice to Amanda Nunes. That's, I guess, the part that I don't understand is if we're taking overall body of work as something that matters, if it goes between two people and one person is up on a series 2-0, that to me feels like that's the answer. And I guess I'm surprised that no one else sort of came around other than Guillerme, who is obviously the smartest one on this panel aside from me. That's all I'm saying.
I get it, man. But I mean, there comes to a point where there's a statute of limitation for me Like if it's happened like 2 years ago, Nunes is number one, 100%. But this is 5 years ago. Like this is 5 years ago in a fight that a lot of people thought Shevchenko won. And it was a terrible fight. So I almost like try to forget about that fight altogether. Like it never happened. And I think a lot of other people who actually spent the money to watch it probably do as well. But yeah, 5 years is a long time. Like I think it's part of the story, but at this point, talking pound for pound, like current, I don't think it holds that much weight, if that makes sense.
That's totally fair.
That's a good point with statute of limitations too. Each of us have a different statute of limitations for what, for ascribing meaning to a loss or a win, right? And we haven't really, correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't really discussed that.
No, it's all like, up to personal philosophies.
It would be technically more objective if we all were on the same page with that, right? Wouldn't it be more, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be less fun,
and more, less fun, as long, scientific.
As long as the definition that we all agree to is set by me, yes, then I fully support it. I fully support this. Yeah. Sure.
Also, though, hopefully it seems like we might get an answer soon. It feels like that's the obvious next fight for both women. Maybe the UFC is willing to throw a little bit more money Valentina Shevchenko's way. We finally get this deciding fight, because I agree, that was a very controversial fight. It's one of those ones you pull out on MMA decisions, that rematch. It's like half-half. It's 50-50 basically between Shevchenko and Nunes. So I hope we see that third fight. It feels to me like a historically important fight that we can't miss. And again, we said it on the post-fight show. I'm not going to go too much more into it. But like, you only have so much of a window to do this sort of thing until all of a sudden that window's gone overnight. This window almost disappeared twice over the last year for each of these women. So like, let's just do this now. I don't know why we're waiting. Hopefully we can get resolution. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to finish out on the other side. Fellas, we are back hitting out some of the smaller scope topics, some of the smaller scope fallout of the past 3 weeks. And one of them I thought was a very fun development. I always enjoy when we sort of get these cycles where we get a lot of new blood. We get this influx of new names making their debuts this month. And we had a couple of this month. Some of it was because of things they directly did, performances these guys had. And others were maybe just because some of the veterans who dropped out of the rankings, this was sort of the next person up. But I think the two big ones would come as no surprise to anyone, right? Muhammad Mahayev, 22 years old, 7-0, 2-0 in the UFC, already has his third fight booked at UFC 280, which is low-key looking like the card of the year already, against Malcolm Gordon. He debuts at number 12 at flyweight, which feels like a nice ranking for him. And then a man we already mentioned earlier, Sergey Pavlovich, the kind of a name who's been low-key creeping up for several years now. Easily the biggest win of his UFC career. That's 4 in a row, all first-round knockouts. He debuts at number 7 heavyweight. So those were the big ones. But then there were also a couple smaller ones that sort of crept in under the radar. You had Ricky Simon, who's now 8-2 in the UFC, 5-fight win streak. He's coming at number 15 at bantamweight, so just creeping in there. And then at lightweight, Grant Dawson, Roberto de Souza, a.k.a. Satoshi, another Ryzen standout, coming in at number 15. They were tied. And so, gentlemen, let's just quickly exclude Muhammad Mahayev from this conversation, because I feel like he's just getting started and a lot of us are going to pick him when it comes to this next question that I'm going to ask you guys. But of the rest of that group, Pavlovich, Simone, Dawson, Satoshi, who do you most believe in, Mike? Whose chances do you like to stick around and do some damage here?
That's a really good question. I think the guy with probably like the most talent and upside that I'm really happy is here right now is Ricky Simon.
So with like him you. Beating, I am so with you on that.
Him beating Jack Shore, and not just beating him, the way he did it, and the just, it's like he knew it the whole time. The whole time he builds up to it, he's just smirking, smiling, like, you guys are so high on this guy, but wait till you see what happens when we get to Long Island. And that's exactly what happened. He went out there, just is such a freak athlete, and you really got to see the athleticism, just the raw athleticism this guy has against a guy who's just super technically talented, like a Jack Shore. He just picked him up. He hoisted him up. He was fine on the feet with him. Like, Ricky's good, man. And Ricky's had, we talk about statute of limitations. I feel like it took him a long time to get over the Uriah Faber fight, at least in the eyes of media members, the eyes of fans. Like, oh, he's always the guy who got tapped and got bolted by Uriah Faber in a fight that like he had no chance, like Faber should have never won. And I feel like this win got people over that a little bit. You see him on the MMA hour. Like that's a very big deal to see, Ricky Simon on the MMA hour. Like that's huge. So I think people are coming around to Ricky, and this is probably long overdue, honestly. He probably should have been on this ranking well before the Jack Shore fight, and here he is getting it now. And yeah, I think he's the guy with the most upside right now of all these guys. Like, Ricky can do some damage. Like, this could be a guy, like, if he gets the right fights and the UFC books him accordingly, he could be a guy who could just slide into the top five, and no one should be surprised about that.
I totally agree with you, Mike. And it's funny when you say he should have been here earlier. It's like, I think that speaks to how ridiculously deep and difficult bantamweight is, that the fact that he wasn't, right? Because even at the very bottom, you got guys like Adrian Yanez, Patchy Mix, Stanny Sabatello, like all these names just scratching and clawing. Nurmagomedov even, like Umar Nurmagomedov. You have so many names just scratching and clawing to try to even get into these rankings. It seems like you really have to make a statement and do something spectacular to finally break in. And now that he's in, I feel like we're going to be seeing Ricky Simone here for a while. AK, what about you? Of those names that we had listed at the beginning, who do you like the most?
I like Simone a lot. What were my other options again, Sheen?
Pavlovich, Dawson, and Satoshi.
Oh, listen, I've already bigged up Pavlovich. So I'm going to stick with that. Like, outside of Makhachev, I really see big things ahead for Pavlovich. Again, if it wasn't for that stretch from like 2019 to this year, where, you know, various, I think there's some injury in there, just various reasons he couldn't get in. Now he's getting the fights he needs. Is he good enough to break into that, you know, Ngannou, Stipe, Gon, trifecta, possibly Taito Vasa? We'll see how that goes. I don't know. But my goodness, I mean, you look at him. And you see, this is a heavyweight. Like, this is a heavy, massive, heavy, heavy,
massive
weight.
Man.
It's a massive
man.
He moves well, very skilled guy, very physically mature. He's 30 years old. You know, we call him a young guy because he's in the heavyweight division, but he's young, but also with, you know, also sort of in his athletic prime. So, yeah, I see big things for him. And it's hard for me. I don't know where he fits in. The only problem is there's this whole issue with, we think that somewhere along the line, there might be an interim title fight, you know, involving Gon and Blades or Tuivasa. If Tuivasa upsets Gon. So there's that to factor in. And then, of course, this never ending, will Stipe and John Jones fight, or will John Jones and Ngannou fight, or will Stipe have a trilogy with? So the title picture is so murky. I don't know how long this guy's going to have to wait to get a clear idea of what he has to do or who he has to beat to get a title shot. And as we know at heavyweight, man, there's so much randomness. All it takes is like one bad night and suddenly, boom, you're bumped two or three spots down the rankings because you got caught by some, or you got matched up with like Alexander Romanov. And then what happened? Now, so you know what I mean? And it's not anyone's fault if Romanov beat him or if Pavlovich beat Romanov. But they're going to have to stay busy until whatever is going on at the top of the division resolves itself. And frankly, I feel like we're not near any resolution to that. So I do pick Pavlovich, but I mean, there's so many things outside of his control that could prevent him from actually contending.
Yeah, there was a real, at least to me, like eye-opening moment during UFC 277 fight week at the weigh-ins, the official or the ceremonial weigh-ins, when you saw those two, Derek Lewis and Pavlovich, square up. And it was just, oh Jesus, like there's not a lot of human beings on earth who can make Derek Lewis look small. And the fact that this guy was, it's like, oh, okay, maybe something bad's about to happen here to Derek Lewis. Steven, I mean, between sort of the guys we've talked about, maybe you can go off the board too. Who do you like the most of this new blood?
For pure regional bias, it's Ricky Simone. He's a guy from Vancouver. He's from AT&T, Portland ATT, or ATT Portland, I should say. I've watched him from early in his career. He was always like the big prospect. And that gym in all of its different incarnations has just had so much bad luck, been used to build other fighters, you know, constantly gets the short end of the stick, you know, their guys fall short. Ricky's always been the standout, always been the stud among them. And I think as much as I want to see him win, as you mentioned before, bantamweight is such a difficult division. And I think that's the major thing that's going to keep him from getting over the hump. You know, if he has the best of nights in a succession of fights and, you know, delivers on the 100% of his promise, I definitely think he could be a champion at bantamweight. But for the more likely, you know, ascension, I would go with Pavlovich simply because of his size, his dominance, and the size of the division. You know, I just think it's a safer bet.
Yeah, I mean, if you're 30 years old in the heavyweight division, you probably got like 12 years to work, right?
Like,
dude's got the whole rest of his career ahead of him. I want to quickly hit the one man we left out, which was because we would have all picked him, I think, Muhammad Mahaev. This is not your dad's flyweight division anymore. Like, if you look at the flyweight top seven right now, Figueiredo, Moreno, Moraes, DJ, Kaikara France, Pantoja, Askarov. That's a ridiculously stacked top seven. Like, that is an incredibly talented top seven right there. If I set the bar at this time next year, so we're talking August 2023, is Muhammad Mahaev in that top seven? And if so, who is he kicked out? Because I don't know how he's going to get in that top seven, but I believe he will. But that is just such a good list of names. Mike, I'll throw it to you first.
Boy, that's tough, Ed. It's funny because, like, I'm so high on this guy that I think he could jump, like, almost all of them at some point. Like, I don't know. Like, 2023 seems as active as this guy is, because he already knows, like, he gets out of fight. He's like, I'm fighting in October. And he gets to fight in October.
Yeah.
Like, he could win in October and be like, I'm fighting in December in Las Vegas, and they'll give it to him. So he could move up pretty quickly. Boy, I'm going to go, like, I think he could jump Askarov pretty quickly. And it's not because of the talent. It's because I just think
Styles.
The activity is going to be huge.
Oh, okay.
Like, I just think Askarov's just, maybe we'll get two fights out of Askarov between now and the end of 23. Mahaev will fight like eight times before the end of 2023. And I'm not even just saying that sarcastically. He's that talented. He's that good. And here's the thing about Mahaev. Like, you look at his record early, but this guy has paid his dues. A super long amateur career. The confidence was there. He learned a lot of lessons early. There's probably some lessons he's going to have to learn, like, now that he's in the UFC, or maybe he's just that good. We don't know. But that's, like, one other thing I want to mention about Ricky Simon is this guy has paid his dues. This guy went through all of the phases that fighters go through, where I'm better than everybody says I am, almost too big for his britches. And then he gets humbled a little bit, and then he comes back and he gets put in a big spot, thinks he's too big for his britches again, gets humbled a little bit, even though he wins. And then he has losses to Font and Faber. But now I feel like the dues have been paid. The britches are just right. Like, he went to the tailor and they put those britches on just right. And I think he's right there. And I think Muhammad has just always been too big for his britches, and he just likes it that way. Like, there's no false confidence in this man whatsoever. This guy already thinks he can beat the Brandon Royvals of the world. And I've said this on this very program before, and I'm going to just say it again for those who missed it. Muhammad Mahaev will not just be the UFC flyweight champion in the next 2 years. By 2025, 2026, he will be a two-division champion. He will be the flyweight champion, and he will be the bantamweight champion.
Wow.
Because I am that, like, he's still, like, as good as he is now, he's still green, and he's not even near his athletic prime yet. We're just getting, like, we are literally just scratching the surface of this guy. Wait till 5 years from right now, when that greenness turns to gold. Oh my gosh. Like, this could be the guy.
Oh my gosh.
This could
Do
be the guy.
Do you have a poster of Mike is him just like a, on, and then on your ceiling in your bedroom?
He's just gobbling up all the property on Mahaev Island right now. There's none left for anyone to buy.
You have a poster of Mahaev on your wall, and then below that, your word of the day calendar, which has britches on it, I guess, because I don't think I've ever heard that word so much on a show before.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, AK. You
know? Listen.
Like, I'm just a poster guy. I'm just a, right. You know, one of the, you know, just look at the posters to motivate. I'm a motivational poster kind of
like
guy,
that.
And Muhammad Mahaev should be the face of all of those. He's that good.
Visualize.
AK, where are you on the Mahaev britches?
I mean, I'm in the opposite side, but I'm this way with every young prospect. People know this. I'm the one who's been, like, you know, putting the water on the Aaron Blanchfield hype train, and, like, I just need to see more. Like, these are kids. Mahaev's just celebrated his birthday on Saturday. This past Saturday, he turned 22. He turned 22. I know.
Does that, by the way, does that mean he was born in 2000?
He is born, correct. Yes.
God, that's,
I know.
That's not good.
I know.
I don't like this at all.
I understand. You can't just look at his pro record. Like, again, he does have that extensive amateur record. But also, for me, that tells me he just stuck around amateur too long. I'd have to look into it more. If I'm wrong, if there's Mokaev experts out there and I'm wrong, and, like, it's like, oh no, this was, like, the right time. I understand. Which, I mean, he would have been, if he jumped in any earlier, he'd been freaking, like, 18 years old. So maybe he couldn't have done it. But So he just turned 22, which is insane. He is already the number 12. He's 22 with two fights in the UFC in the number 12 ranked guy in our rankings, the flyweight division, which I think is a very strong division. That's crazy, but feels fair. I like how they matched him up next. Malcolm Gordon, UFC 280, October 22nd. Very smart matchup. Good old Canadian boy getting thrown into the fire. That's fine. I won't take it personally. So this is very logical matching. If he beats Malcolm Gordon definitively, like he handled Charles Johnson, like he handled Cody Durden, I'll get a little more excited. But I am always with all young prospects. I need to see more. So I'm not as like, you know, big as saying like, oh, he'll definitely be in the top seven by this time next year. Though when you framed it that way, though, I did see some names who I think he could pass. Like, where's our? Oh, yeah. Tell. I mean, like, well, looking at our top seven, I could see him passing Askarov. Askarov is very good. But I just think like a year from now, Makhachev could be at the point where he could be either better than just beat him and be better than him, or put together a resume that is lets him edge into the top seven. But I'm a little more optimistic about that. The two division champion thing, man, I don't know. It's just so early. I just always think about Brandon Vera, and hey, listen, that's night and day. You know, Brandon Vera is a different fighter from a different era, different divisions. Brandon Vera is like, I'm going to be a two division champion. Everyone's like, oh, Brandon Vera is great. I just
didn't expect a Brandon Vera mention.
And
he's a one championship, two division champion, or was. I don't know if that's definitely not anymore.
I think he only won the one title in one, right? Didn't he only win the one?
I don't know. Like, who knows?
The one in one?
The fact that we don't know for sure tells you
two billion people do, AK, and I guess we're not one of them.
God, I can't wait until Roberto Soldier just gets to be watched by 2 billion people.
It's the biggest promotion in the world.
It's too early for me to say. It's fun to project. I'm supposed to be the prince of positivity, and I am positive, but I'm not always the prince of absurd optimism. I can't go down that road. I need to see more. Give me two more Makhachev fights before I start saying he's definitely going to be champion. He's definitely going to be those are two of the strongest divisions in all of MMA, 125, 135.
So would you say, AK, and I feel like you're the right person to ask this question to, would you say he might need one more win before we start throwing him in there with former interim champions and things like that? Because Paddy Pimblett, I mean, you're ready to throw him right in there with Tony Ferguson.
Let's go, Mike Heck! Mike Heck chose violence today!
What else does he have to do?
You can throw him in there. I didn't say he's going to win. You can throw Makhachev in there with, who's that? You can throw him in there with Kai Kara France if you want. I have no problem with it. I don't think you should. But
that's utterly absurd.
But he doesn't have the fame, but he doesn't have the intrigue of Paddy Pimblett. That's a whole other thing. And you brought up Paddy, Mike. I didn't bring up Paddy. No, you brought up Paddy.
Mike Heck chose violence, and I'm here for it.
I just had to, you know. Listen, we slow roll almost everybody, but Paddy, we don't need to.
He's 3-0.
Just throw him in there.
What did I say? He's 3-0. Is Makhachev 3-0 in the UFC?
He will be.
Okay, well, we don't know that. Malcolm Gordon, don't count him out. But listen, we don't. He's not 3-0. And also, he has way more pro. He's a 20. He had a name. He had a name coming to the UFC. He had like a legitimate, like there was a legitimate buzz there heading into the UFC. It's like fame-wise, they're totally different. Hey, find me the equivalent of the flyweight Tony Ferguson. You want to throw him in there with Makhachev? I'm all for it.
The constant disrespect. Just the constant El Kakoui disrespect is so ridiculous. We don't even need to do this.
I think he would win. I'm just saying. It's a great fight.
Yeah, and cool. And then he's fighting like top five lightweights for the rest of his career. That's just a great time for everybody involved.
Call him out. Tony Ferguson, call this fight out.
You guys both targeted Askarov as maybe the name on that top seven that he could kick out. That feels right to me. I think I probably split the difference where I'm not like, this guy's going to be a two division champion in the next few years, but I am maybe a little higher on him than AK. Where do you fall, Steven?
Two division champion seems a little bit presumptuous at this point. There are so many different ways to lose in this sport, and flyweight is such a competitive division. This guy is an out and out star, and so he will get those opportunities sooner than others. But I have questions as to whether his wrestling dominance will, how he'll do against the top five, basically. You know, those guys like, you know, Moreno, Figgy, Perez, Royval, you know, Pantoja, those guys are all well-rounded threats. And I think we haven't really seen the full array of his talent yet. We're about to, because he's a star and that's very clear. And so he'll get, not the red carpet up to the top five, but he'll get a manageable path. I don't necessarily disagree with you on Askarov. I think that's definitely maybe the lily pad that he jumps on to get there. But I don't know. It's the Prince of Negativity, I would say. It's too soon to say, you know. Too soon.
I'm adopting that as a nickname now. We're using that. Yeah. Well, let's move on, fellas. We have two last quick things we want to hit. And actually, speaking of flyweight and Pantoja, because we mentioned him a couple times, he has sort of fallen into this spot, as we mentioned earlier, where it's pretty obvious at this point that he deserves a title shot. And it's also pretty obvious that he's just not going to get one anytime soon. It's just the way the division is playing out right now. But there's just a lot of that going on in the UFC right now. You look all throughout the promotion, there are probably four or five names you could cobble up who reasonably deserve a title shot, and they're just not going to get it because the circumstances outside of their control. And so just real quickly, Mike, of this list, you can even just one word this, two word this if you want. Of this list, who is getting most screwed out of a title shot right now? Magomed Ankalaev, Yair Rodriguez, Marina Rodriguez, Pantoja, or Ketlin Vieira?
Pantoja. It's,
yeah,
Pantoja.
I think I agree with you.
Like, yeah, I mean, and it's not like he's getting screwed. It's just, he is just the baron of bad timing right now. He's just, all I'll say to you, Mr. Pantoja, is this: whatever Yair Rodriguez is trying to do right now, don't do that. Okay.
Oof, yeah.
Don't do that. Go fight Kai Kara France. Like, maybe the end of the year. Cause I mean, you look at Brandon Moreno and Kai Kara France, like, next to each other, side by sides after that fight, and you would think, if you didn't know the result, that Kai Kara France beat the hell out of Brandon Moreno, because Kai Kara France didn't even look like he was in a fight. Moreno looked like he fought five guys at once. So I it's not out of the realm of possibility that KKF can come back at the end of the year. But if you're Pantoja, like, try to, whenever they put Moreno and Figueroa together, you fight KKF on the undercard, like, underneath on that same card, be the backup guy, be on that same card. And as long as you win, you're next. Like, you're getting the fight. If as long as you win, you're next. But waiting is not the best idea. And I think Pantoja is kind of aware of that. Like, he knows he has a compelling case to fight for the belt, but I think he knows that he's just in a place of horrible timing right now. So go fight KKF, get another win, and then you're next, brother. You're next. Just win that next fight and you're in. But don't say, I'm going to wait. I don't care if it takes me 5 years. I just won't fight for 5 years. I'm just going to fight Moreno or Figueiredo. Just take one more, get in there, go fight for your belt. I'd say by middle end of 2023, he'll get his title shot. So yeah, I think he's the guy, but I don't think he's getting screwed. I just think he's just in the worst place right now.
Really bad. So I was stunned. You mentioned Yair. I was stunned by what Yair did on Saturday with, like, I don't want to fight for an interim. I'm going to wait for Volkanovski. That feels like such a perfect encapsulation of this dude's whole entire UFC career of just, like, you might have been a legendary fighter and we've just never found it out because you're constantly in these spots where you're just making the wrong call on this stuff.
He didn't say, I don't want to. He said, I'm not fighting Josh Emmett. I'm not fighting for an interim title. I am fighting Alexander Volkanovski. And of course, Dana White was asked about that. He rolled his eyes and said, you know how I feel about people who say they're going to wait. And then he moved on. That's never a good sign.
He of a one fight win streak. That was an injury occurrence. And that was it. Like, that's what you're rolling off of. I agree with you with Pantoja. Like, I can't imagine the frustration that dude must have been feeling all week when you're seeing these two guys in the co-main event fighting for this title that you've beaten both of them and, like, one of them twice. Like, you're 3-0 against this, and it's just, you're not even in the conversation. Steven, where do you fall? The Prince of Negativity, where do you fall among this group? Who's getting the most screwed?
How do people feel about Beneil Dariush?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good call,
too.
That's a good call, too.
I think it might be just another baron of bad timing situation, but, you know, the guy has built a 7-fight winning streak. It's not as long as Islam Makhachev's, but he also, you can make the argument for, you know, beating Tony Ferguson in the way that he did, kind of putting the nail in Tony's, you know, coffin, so to speak, maybe, possibly. And then Michael Chandler came on the scene, you know, Justin Gaethje got another shot. Rafael Fiziev is, like, being talked of as a title contender. And then there's the ever-present specter of Conor McGregor's ghost.
That's the thing.
And now Gamrot, who he actually has to fight. Now he has to fight Gamrot.
And now Gamrot that's right. Yeah.
Even if Charles beats Islam, Conor's probably going to get that next shot and Beneil's still going to be out.
That's the correct answer. I'm changing my answer to the Prince of Negativity's answer.
I could just go with Prince of Darkness if that's easier.
Oh my gosh.
That is a good call though, because his feels like, you know, even if he wins this next fight, he's going to be on this prolonged sort of path of frustration because of the Irishman.
Right. It's like we've got nobody else. Okay, you can have your title, Benil. You're 45 and
you've won like 12 fights in a row. We'll finally let you get it. AK, where do you land on this?
I'll toss Marina Rodriguez out there just because she's a little bit in the same boat as Benil. We're like, one, she has a super tough fight ahead of her now. Now she has to fight Amanda Lamoche, who's one of the boogie women of that division. I mean, I know she got beat by Andrade, but whatever. I mean, everyone gets beat by Andrade. Outside of that, she just ran through Michelle Waterson. And now that's another huge name that Marina has to beat. And Marina has beaten a lot of the same people that the current champion, Carla Esparza, beat, Yan Xiaonan, Michelle Waterson. So, and she fought Esparza to a very controversial split decision. So it's like, she should have had her title fight already. We were fine with Esparza getting it first, but now Esparza again might have fight Zhang Wei Li. God knows if Namajunas can get a big win and watch that horrible first, the taste of that horrible first fight out of everyone's mouths. Maybe she gets another shot at Carla, the trilogy bout.
God, and that's no one wants to see that.
If people forget easily,
No one's forgetting that one, man.
Everyone forgot the Nunes Shevchenko fight, the second one. That was real bad.
It was a forgettable fight.
Yeah, there you go. But Marina, like, again, she probably could have, she has the resume to probably have fought for the title already. I think she would, I frankly would pick her to beat Carla Esparza. So that's one thing she has over some of these other names we mentioned, other than maybe Ankalaev, is like, I think she could be the UFC champion if she got her shot. Like, I would favor her over Carla Esparza, probably. But that's not going to happen anytime soon, because Zhang Weili is going to slip in there. Like I said, maybe some sort of rematch with Namajunas. Mackenzie Dern, who she's beaten, is like a bigger name than her, though, and could, who knows, leapfrog. There's just so many bad things that could happen for Marina. And again, she's probably good enough to be the champion. And I don't know if or when she ever gets her shot. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, she just doesn't belong to sort of that big group that we have at 115, right? Of the popular names, the former champions, mm-hmm. everyone like that. Last thing for us today, fellas. And this one's more of a personal one for AK.
Let's do it.
It feels fitting. We let people take victory laps on this show. It's sort of, you know, there's bragging rights with these sort of things. And I would say, AK, you deserve one.
Thank you.
We may poke fun over the months at some of your ranking tactics, your loyalty to certain old veterans, old dogs. You really hold on to them much longer than everybody else. We've been haranguing your loyalty to Volkan Ozdemir for months now. The man was struggling. He hadn't won in like nearly 3 years, not since 2019. And the rest of us pretty much gave up on him. But you always believed, my man. You kept him in your top 10 through thick and thin. I think coming into this month, you were pretty much the sole reason he was actually clinging to like a number 15 spot. And now the man just went and did the damn thing at UFC London, dominates Paul Craig, vaults back to number 11 this month, and he's left you sitting pretty freaking validated here, my man. So I'll give the floor to you. You are the man of the hour with Volkan Ozdemir. You called it.
You say poke fun. It gets a lot more hurtful than that, Shaheen. Especially Shaheen, from you in particular,
who
has really been busting my chops about both on the show, sending me personal messages on the Slack, attacking me for... This is all true. This is true. Let me tell you something, guys. I never worried about... Despite everything that Shaheen said to me, I never worried about keeping Ozdemir in the top 10, because I always felt his resume was still very strong. Okay, so he fought his way into the top 5 when he got to the UFC, got a bunch of big wins, got a title shot, loses to Anthony Smith, fine, loses to Dominic Reyes, fine. Those are top 10 guys. Okay, you drop him out of the top 5. I completely understand. And then he picks up a couple of wins. Latifi, Rakic, very close fight, but still beat him. That is the fight that Shaheen was talking about, which was several years ago now. And then he loses to Yuri Prochazka and Ankalaev, two of the, I think, top 5, top 7 light heavyweights in the world. And that is like, that to me does not make you lose your spot. Those are really great fighters. You don't lose your spot. So he was certainly hanging by a thread, but to drop him in favor of, I don't know, like Nikita Krylov, I don't know, Jamal Hill, like those guys from me had not done enough to pass him yet. We have to have respect for veterans. Now, Shaheen is right. I'm very rigid. I do hang on to people for too long, but there's a reason for that. As the rest of the staff found out recently, I keep personal databases I've been keeping personal databases, my own personal databases of rankings, of records for like the last like 15 years. Like I've been doing this
They're
for a long
thorough.
Time.
Like I was yes. supremely impressed with this.
And I've been keeping a ranking. I've been keeping an iteration of the rankings, an updated iteration of the rankings for that same amount of time. I've been doing rankings forever. So when Shaheen came up to me with the cute idea of like, oh, we should actually do a rankings for MMA fighting. I was like, I'm way ahead of you, brother. I got my own methodology. The foundation is set. I have set foundation. You guys are starting fresh. You guys are like maybe having your mind who's top 10, like whatever. I have had it in. There's metadata in my, you know what I mean? That exists on the web and Google in a Google Drive somewhere in the cloud. That's all my rankings over the last, you know, however many years. So I am not so quick to move people out of position. I don't get bored. I don't treat this like a game. Like these are toys. Like, oh, this person's been in the spot for too long. I'm just going to move someone ahead of them. No. This is, I told this to Shaheen before. This is, my rankings are like a bonsai tree. I've been very carefully snipping away at this bonsai tree for a long, long, long time. And I don't just start snipping off branches.
In your ground floor apartment?
Yes, in
the San Fernando Valley?
That's right. Because some 22-year-old flyweight comes along and starts body slamming people. I start chipping off branches. That's not how a bonsai tree works. That is not how my rankings work. Volkan Ozdemir is a top 10 light heavyweight. I was right.
Well, technically he's number 11 for us. But
damn it.
But I do apologize to you, AK. You were right. That being said, I would like an apology from you for keeping Conor McGregor in the rankings like 6 years after his only like relevant win at lightweight. That's all.
He's That's number 16. Saying. He's number 16 in my rankings, buddy. You're lucky he's not a Favre. He's that close.
Oh, well, you know, sometimes you take L's and I took an L this month. I'm man enough to admit that. Now when Darren Till and Kelvin Gastelum, that's a different conversation for a different day for you, because you're still the only one hanging on to those two.
But, I'll be vindicated by them too. I'll be vindicated.
In the meantime, that is all of it for us this month. We appreciate you guys, as always, for joining into the MMA Fighting Rankings show. A fun one. Thank you so much to Steve in Morocco for joining us for the first time. We'll have to have you back. The Prince of Darkness, as he calls himself now. I really enjoy that. Also, Mike Heck. It's always fun having you, man. That man is AK Lee. I am Sean Alshadi. Please keep it locked to MMA Fighting for all your MMA coverage needs. We love you guys, and we'll see you soon.
Damn, I miss my open to Roddy Dangerfield. Shoot.
I tried.
No, you did it, and then I was going to tell you.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out.
Yep.
Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAC.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
Oh, yeah. And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.